Okay. Now, what I want to say about these articles coming out in the New York Times and the San Jose Mercury about the links of these characters to California goes back to several four or five major premises that I've had over a period of 18 years of research. It's almost 18 years this November. The first I have said is the allegations that terrorism, the kind that I'm talking about, the kind that Ronald Reagan or Alexander Haig are using, and Ronald Reagan used in California for 8 years, is a product of what the Defense Department and CIA called Operation Chaos, the FBI called COINTEL. It's manufactured terrorism that comes from specific places, operations, and funds to create chaos. Secondly, part of the chaos involves the unleashing of murderers and assassination teams that can kill presidents, journalists, congressmen, judges, civil rights leaders, and so forth, and rock musicians and Jews, blacks, Indian, Chicano leaders. Third, the center for selecting the presidents that will carry on this kind of terror has been in California, coming from Stanford, California, from Stanford Research, from the mind control programs, from Los Angeles, from the public relations firms that sell you people like Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, those organizations. And fourth, I believe that specific agents are involved in spreading terror, such as the Theodore Shackleys, William Colbys, George Bush, the Henry Kissingers, Richard Helms, and so forth, William Casey, John Connolly. These people are in the business of spreading terror and setting up these assassination teams. And finally, I believe that their main goal is to control the world's narcotic traffic and put the politics into the form of the military dictatorship that Mr. Schmitz of the John Birch Society talks about. Now, in California, there was a company set up called Stanford Technology. And this is from an article in the New York Times. You can all get it and read it later if you want. And I want to give you just an outline of how important this story is that broke on these subjects. The story was in the New York Times October 13th, just last week. There's a company in Palo Alto called Stanford Technology in Sunnyvale, California, right near Palo Alto. It became a subsidiary of Analog Devices in 1981, but it began as Stanford Technology. And it was formed in 1975 by an Iranian by the name of Albert Hakim, H-A-K-I-M, who lived in Iran, Tehran, and Richard Helms of the CIA, who is in charge of our mind control and our zombie assassins, was sent in disgrace over to Iran in 1973 to become the ambassador after the Watergate slap on the wrist he got for perjuring himself about the Allende murder. Richard Helms went over to Iran, but he didn't stop his CIA activity, and he could link up with Albert Hakim, who came from Tehran all the way from Richard Helms and Iran out to Sunnyvale, California, the heart of Silicon Valley with the most sensitive secrets and computer work for United States defense. And in 1974, Hakim, when he came to this country, was working over in Iran for Hewlett-Packard organization. Now, Hewlett-Packard is a well-known commercial organization, a large supplier for the defense industry. The members of the Hewlett-Packard firm, David Packard, former, as I say, Deputy Secretary of Defense, is a strong advocate of a firm line in dealing against the Soviet Union. And Mr. Hewlett also, they have a reputation for being very strong against the Soviet Union. As a matter of fact, in the book Global Reach, the story of multinational corporations, William Hewlett of Hewlett-Packard was important. He was on the board of directors of the Chase Manhattan Bank with John J. McCloy and David Packard, also a partner. Hewlett was a partner of David Packard. And between the Defense Department and Chase Manhattan, they had very strong anti-Soviet feelings. feeling. So we're not talking about equipping the Soviet Union with electronic equipment. Albert Hakim worked for Hewlett-Packard in Tehran, which is one of the largest suppliers of the Defense Department, and Richard Helms, one of the geniuses behind our mind control zombies, and that operation and counterintelligence through the whole Cold War was in Iran with Albert Hakim, and he takes a trip out to Sunnyvale, California, and sets up a firm. He has it set up in Delaware, but the offices are out here in California in 1974. And in 1975, they began their dealings in Turkey. They were to send electronic equipment to Turkey, but it had to be through companies overseas because Turkey had invaded Cyprus. So it was illegal to do it over the table. So again, the subterfuge of sending to Turkey. And of course, with their heavy operations in Iran, I think of how the Shah was forced to leave and he died. And Shah, who shot the Pope, came from Turkey and was strongly linked to the Grey Wolves and the Nazi organization in Turkey. Whether or not he worked Shah through Hewlett-Packard, I don't know yet, or we may never know. But they set up operations in Turkey in 1975, Switzerland 1974. And then Frank Turpel came out and joined this corporation, Stanford Technology. But he became president of their subsidiary called Intercontinental Technology Incorporated. They gave him his own name, but it was under Stanford Technology. In 1976, Stanford Technology was sending weapons with CIA agents into Egypt. 1977, they were working with people inside the Soviet Union, and they were sending weapons to Idi Amin. And Edwin Wilson joined this group in 1977. But Mr. Hakim came over here from Iran to Sunnyvale, California, where he set up Stanford Technology, which had a subsidiary, Intercontinental Technology Incorporation, that Frank Turpel was the president of. And then he set up offices in Washington, D.C., Geneva, London, and in Sunnyvale, California. And then Wilson joined Turpel. So Turpel was the president of this group, and this group worked with Hewlett-Packard and right under the nose of Stanford University. And most of the people here were all involved in CIA and defense operations. Now, Edwin Wilson had offices in Washington, D.C. He worked in Office of Navy Intelligence with Bobby Inman, who's now deputy director of the CIA. He worked with Henry Kissinger, Theodore Shackley, and all of the heavies that have been in counterintelligence throughout the world. And Wilson then in Washington set up 127 dummy front organizations, so that these people were literally covering the entire globe. And they're very important because of their ability to get around the world and have these offices in Switzerland and be supplying Egypt and the PLO and goodness knows where else. They had direct links down to the Nguyen Bank in Australia and were supplying Colonial Dignitas, the Torture Center, and Michael Townley of the CIA. And they had international links with all kinds of operations. But the important thing was that they got their cover for much of their work from an Iranian from Tehran who worked there where Richard Helms was. So that Richard Helms never stopped working for the CIA. He could be the ambassador of Iran. But the point is, he could make this giant leap over to Sunnyvale, California, and set up these offices. Now, there's a fascinating book called The Last Days of America by Erdman, and it's a story about a man named Frank Rogers, not Frank Turpel, who passes by the Stanford area and goes down to Sunnyvale, California, the same city, and he sent to Switzerland for selling missiles and secret weapons and defense machinery in Switzerland. And when he gets to Switzerland, the office that he's working for is actually in Belgium and in Germany, and it's the IG Farben. And this book, The Last Days of America, is how the German corporation IG Farben takes control of America and squeezes America, and how the Fourth Reich resurrects again. This is the man who wrote the book, The Crash of 79, Erdman. But it begins, and you get into the book, and it's fascinating because it goes right from Sunnyvale, California, to Switzerland, to IG Farben, Holland and Belgium, and the people in these companies set up all kinds of offices to conceal what they were doing. Stanford Technology became part of Analog Devices, and then they set up other offices, I say, in 75 in Turkey, and then they had other, the dummy fronts go into the hundreds later. And meanwhile, Mr. Hakim worked for Hewlett Packard. He was a representative in Iran, very much part of the Defense Department, and another man who worked in California in one of their subsidiaries also worked for Hewlett Packard. They set up the Intercontinental Technology Incorporated, the International Imaging Systems, the Stanford Technology Group set up different offices and transactions with all kinds of names. But the important thing was that the men that were involved with the Omega 7, the anti-Castro Cubans, the bombings and blowing up of airplanes, silencers bought from Mitchell Werbel, assassination silencers, the Alpha 66, the Frank Sturgis that was involved in Watergate with the Kennedy assassination coming out of Miami, the Nazi links to Australia and South America. The home base came from California for these people, which is perfectly natural considering William Colby coming back from Southeast Asia after the Phoenix program, setting up what I said was the SLA, is the CIA, and the rash of terrorism to break the radical movements in California when the Vietnam War was over. I know that most of the mind control in this country, the home base is Atascadero, Vacaville, private hospitals in San Francisco, all throughout this state, that the crazies come here, get their mind control programming, go back east or wherever it is to kill. But California is the basis. UCLA, the Center for Mind Control, the Stanford Research, the University of California up in San Francisco. When Candy Jones wrote her book on working for the CIA, she came out to San Francisco and Oakland. And Candy Jones is very interested in a case that is now coming out to the West Coast. And she's concerned. She's a radio announcer in New York, and she's been talking about the David Berkowitz story. And now we bring that, the son of Sam, back to California because there are stories in New York. And finally, out here on the West Coast, the San Jose Mercury yesterday had a story about son of Sam. The lead story on this was son of Sam's mysterious clue to the Stanford slaying. And it seems that David Berkowitz, the notorious son of Sam, who now they're admitting didn't do all the shootings, if he shot a few, the gun was passed around. David Berkowitz was arrested in New York City and claimed the credit for the six murders and the other attempted murders. And while he was in jail, he was sending letters out that he knew about a murder of a woman, Arliss Perry, who died at the Stanford Chapel in 1974, that he was with the person who killed her before he was arrested, and even before he did the long series of, or was involved with these series in New York City, that he knows the person who killed her, who bragged about her, he knows where the wounds were located, where the weapon was inside of her. Now, as far as the chronology of this case, which is interesting to me, because I've studied the David Berkowitz as being part of what I called, we have our California zombies and these mind control killers that have been released to do and spread terrorism throughout this country, but particularly in California. We had a whole bloody era of that. Then all of a sudden, Berkowitz showed up in New York, and I believed he was like our California zombies. But interestingly enough, he is linking his association or knowledge to this one particular murder. Now, in February 15th of 1973, a Leslie Perloff was murdered in Palo Alto. She was a graduate from Stanford University. She was a law clerk. She was going into law school soon, and she was murdered leaving the law library. October 13th, 1 year later, 1974, Arliss Perry was murdered in Palo Alto at the Stanford Memorial Chapel. She was working for a law firm in Palo Alto. in 1976 to 1977 were the Son of Sam murders, or the ones that he was involved with in New York City, and he was arrested in September of 77. And in 1979, he started to say that he knew who killed Arliss Perry in California. Now, that interested me, and there is an investigator on the Son of Sam case named Maury Terry. And various people who subscribed to these tapes in New York told him to contact me because I had information or clues to the David Berkowitz affair in New York City. Now, I believe that the California violences were all linked, and if Berkowitz has information on one of the cases, like Arliss Perry, it would apply to the other people. I had the unfortunate experience of meeting a person who was brought to my home in 1974. This woman, a young girl, wanted to do research, wanted to help me. She knew Peter Dale Scott in the Bay Area and Paul Krasner, and she was going to come to my house, and she kept begging to come and help me with my files, and she said she'd come alone, and finally, one Sunday, I said, okay, you can come down for the day. And she indexed a book for Peter Dale Scott, a fine researcher, and she wanted to come down. And when she came, she brought a man. And I said, I thought you were going to be alone. And she said, oh, I'm very sorry. It's just a friend of mine, and he's going to do some skin diving down at Point Lobos. He just wanted to take your picture. And I was simply furious. He left. He says, okay, I'll go. And she yelled, come back at 5. And I made her sit in the living room, except for going to the bathroom. I wouldn't let her leave the chair. I said, you told me you would come alone, and who is this person? And I had a very weird feeling about him. And I took down information about him and wrote a description as much as I could, as I did at the time in January when John Hinckley Jr., I believe it was him as much as I would ever know anything, was at the house in January, and I've gone into that on these programs. Well, anyway, he picked her up at 5. She walked out the door and left, and I asked the name and wrote the license number. And then she called me several weeks later and apologized. She said, I should never have brought him to your house. He's the fellow who killed Leslie Perloff at Palo Alto outside the library. And I said, thanks a lot. She said, I think I should tell you that he is the one, and I feel guilty for bringing him because he claims that he killed her. Now, his description of the man who was at my home that she brought fits exactly the description that Maury Terry in New York City told me, he's very close to David Berkowitz, told me was at the law office with this particular woman, Arliss Perry, spending 15 minutes or so with her shortly before she was murdered. Somebody came into the office, she knew him intimately, and I think this is a break in the case that would take it away from the cult, the queer kind of linkage that they're trying to do, a cult murder, to a real hard-ass Nazi, fascist, white international guard that have been behind these campus murders, these freeway murders, these slashers, the Oda family, the Manson family, the entire California syndrome of murder after murder that I have listed and can compile again for you if you want me to go on in a certain order and make sense out of them. Now, Berkowitz claims that he knows the person who was responsible for this one murder, and he has all the details. And hopefully, maybe if I work with the proper people, we can get some perspective on these. Interesting enough, Arliss Perry, as I say, worked at a law firm in Palo Alto, and somebody was there that she seemed to know. Leslie Perloff was also working at the law library as a clerk at the law library. Now, another fellow involved with the law, a lawyer from a wealthy family law office, was stalking Caroline Kennedy this last couple of months. He's from a wealthy Palo Alto family. A lawyer in law office went to Hastings Law School. He went to New York City, went to the Metropolitan Museum where she works, and asked, is that her? And Carolyn heard somebody say she's over there, some reference to where she would be. He spoke to her. She had no interest in him. When she got to the apartment, he was at her apartment. He had a map, and it's pretty hard to find the apartment or get inside the hall where Carolyn Kennedy lives in New York City. Most of these apartments have double locks or keys. But he was able to stalk her. She was afraid that this would be like a Chapman or a Hinckley affair, and they went ahead and prosecuted him. But the question is, where did he find her? Why did he ask, who is that? And they said, that's her. There she goes. And then he came up to her. How does he get inside the apartment? How did he know where she lives? And the important thing about this particular character is that he threatened, well, forget my proposal to marry you, but the next time I will, and he used a profanity, to all of your relatives unless you marry me. Now, he's threatened to get the rest of her relatives, which would be maybe her cousin, Robert Kennedy Jr., or Ted Kennedy's son, or any of the young Kennedys that want to be political in the future. Kevin King, a lawyer from California from a very wealthy family, was able to find Carolyn Kennedy to keep appearing, reappearing, calling her house, getting the phone number. So this has to be a higher level of intelligence, inside information. But the stage is set like the book Black Abductor, with the story of the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, that the full life cycle of the young Kennedys is definitely threatened. He has on the record now that he will be going after her relatives. If he's rejected by her, the relatives will get it. So you can be sure that the young male political relatives of the Kennedys have fair warning. And it comes from a wealthy lawyer from Palo Alto, California, another law office. It's interesting how many law offices are involved in these cases, and these are just a few. Now, what I try to explain to this fellow working on the Berkowitz case, that none of these murders, I don't believe, except for testing the stomach of particular people, are random murders. And he agreed with me. They have a meaning. He doesn't see the meaning yet, this Terry in the East Coast, because he hasn't worked on it from this angle. He's looking for some weird occult group and not an international white guard fascist Nazi group that are doing these things. And I explained the reason there were murders of priests or a devout Christian girl like this Miss Perry, or a murder in a Stanford chapel, was that one of the purposes of this kind of violence is to show the Antichrist and the Christ lovers as opponents. When I wrote in 1974 the story, The SLA is the CIA, I wrote 15 motives for the creation of the SLA by William Colby of the CIA and Richard Helms before him with the mind control. And 13th of the 15 motives was to link the demons to the devil, or to communists, or to radicals, and to make the right thinking appear to be Christians. And I wrote, this was 1974, Christian and Christ versus radical and terrorists. The Christianity, the family, and God are fighting for survival today with social change and radical politics always being associated with the Antichrist. I wrote that Colston Westbrook in the CIA came to set up the SLA. He came from the Christian University in Tokyo, that Wes Davis of the CIA was an authority on the evils of communism and Antichrist, and worked for the World Humanity Against Totalitarianism, a Christian organization. That CIA agent William Buckley criticized Randolph Hearst for appeasing the SLA because his daughter should be sacrificed in the name of Christ. The woman involved, the Persoff murder, the woman who was murdered at Stanford prior to the Perry murder, the same gal that was at my house told me, and intimated some connections to E. Howard Hunt and William Buckley. She was vague about them, but brought their names into that case. And he was very quick to say to Randolph Hearst that the SLA story is the Christ versus the Antichrist. And I made a statement in 1974 of the use of kidnappings and bombings by police provocateurs that would set up Christians that would appear to be sacrificed by the Antichrist. And that's why I believe the emphasis on the Manson family or the Berkowitz ties to the cult is a diversionary from the real story. I believe there's more to this story than the writers and researchers know or want to believe, and they're going to have to change their way of looking at affairs before they ever solve these murders. They will remain unsolved unless they get serious about the origin of these particular murders. Now, a fellow in the U.S. Senate, not the U.S. Senate, the State Senate, Ed Davis, is very popular. There's a large article about him in the paper this week, Los Angeles Times. Ed Davis has a new image, effective legislator. He was the head of the criminal conspiracy section in Los Angeles that set up Donald DeFries and Lewis Tackwood and counterintelligence. It was his office that actually, with the FBI, fabricated evidence that the Amnesty International talked about this week with Geronimo Pratt, the Black Panther leader that was framed through lies. That came out of the Los Angeles Police Department. This Ed Davis was put in with the most money of any senator in California, came to him from the Mike Curb Productions that are linked to David Murdoch and the Richard Mellenscaife and the far right, Richard Vagary from the Young Americans for Freedom, another direct link to the Mellons and counterintelligence operations. Ed Davis had the most money that any person could have to run for a state senator, and he's trying to get an aura of respectability now that he's left the LAPD. The same week that they have a huge picture of Ed Davis being a great California senator, the Los Angeles Times has a large article, A Challenge to American Justice, with a picture of Geronimo Pratt, and another article about Sirhan trying to get parole. Again, faked by Ed Davis, the evidence, the story of who killed Robert Kennedy. What I'm trying to say, to summarize some of these names that I'm throwing out this evening, is that the terrorism that we had in California when Reagan was governor, the Robert Kennedy assassination, the Black Panther operations, the San Quentin Six, the Chowchilla kidnappings came later when Jimmy Carter just became president. The California terror syndrome is a product of our mental hospitals, of the CIA using specifically the California locations to spread stories like the Manson family, the SLA. These were the babies of the intelligence systems of the FBI, the Defense Department, Navy intelligence, and various assassination teams for the express purpose of having in this country the same kind of off-guard terrorism that creates the necessity for computers to have in the police departments. The same people that created the Baader-Meinhof in Germany, the Red Brigades, the Japanese Army, or Carlos in Europe, created the Black Guerrilla family, and even some of the weathermen and some of the counterintelligence people that surfaced this week. I believe that the weathermen and the bomb caches, the Black Guerrilla surfacing at this time, is simpatico with the way Reagan ran the state when he was the governor. When he wants tight CIA bills to have CIA agents in police departments and local organizations, he creates the excuse, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we get these old worn-out guys from the 70s, the bomb factories, the Black Guerrilla. It's like a deja vu to have to live through this darn thing. You study it, you know it's going to come, you know how they orchestrate it, and all of a sudden, there's bomb factories all over the place, and many of those people that set up these operations, the brought us the police, that brought us the COINTEL program and the excuses for Operation Chaos, they just fade away or disappear, became prosperous when it was all over. People like Timothy Leary and Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin made no social change of any kind, but managed to bring on more police, more surveillance, and more Alexander Haigs and Ronald Reagans, who will have more to talk about terrorism. But the important thing is that Berkowitz in New York City knows a lot about murders in California. Why? Because he's out of that same mind control program in South Korea. When he was in the army, he was against the war. He wanted to come home. They began administering LSD, his program, and his head changed 180 degrees. He began to meet with weird people in New York City who did many killings. And then he was involved with six murders. But his mind control work seems to be wearing off, just as Candy Jones did, or Marina Oswald's, the control the CIA had. And as Berkowitz works with some of these investigators, and as they're more willing, say, to call out here and work and ask questions and make connections, it may be that someday there will be a breakthrough. There is enough hard evidence to link the SLA, the Manson family, the California murders, and all these violences to a network of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Department. And all we need are a few good investigators who finally catch on the modus operandi. And once they get it, the pieces will fall into place. I've saved a lot of those pieces. I hope they're useful. I'm helping some of these people now to ask the right questions. And hopefully enough energy will be put in to understand what happened to this country and how Reagan wants to pursue it and start all over again. The thing is to stop it now before he gets enough muscle to create it again. In the meantime, we're over this hour one more time. Have a good week, and I'll be back with you again next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.